is Psalm 27. Psalm 27. And what I'm showing on my screen is my little favorite app. It's called Pocket Sword. Played with it with Deb some. And as I was going through this psalm this morning, I was trying to take notes about some of these key words, because I can click on, you know, for light, that little number 216. I can hit it, and then at the bottom there, I get the definition. So the Lord is my light. And these are the Strong's Concordance definition. So handy dandy tool, makes it really nice and fast. But as I'm, you know, written out three or four handwritten pages of notes, I'm like, well, I'm kind of only getting the teaspoon level of definition. Why don't I just show it, and then we can talk about it as we go through. So starting off the Psalm of David, he asks two questions. And they both start with statements. The statement is, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Okay, so the Lord there is Jehovah. It's in all caps. That's the eternal God. That's the name that God revealed to Moses in the burning bush. You know, I am that I am. The unending, there's no beginning, no ending of God. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Okay, so what's light? Well, literally, it says there, it's illumination. Or luminary, and see in the second line, it includes happiness. The Lord is my light, and my salvation. Salvation being liberty, deliverance, prosperity, safety. Who is going to provide you with wisdom, and illumination, and insight in life? Who's going to deliver you and grant you liberty from fears and primarily sin? It's just the Lord. Given that the Lord is our light and our salvation, who do we have to fear? And that word fear there means, well, literally to fear, but also could be morally revere, which is how we use the word fear when we're talking about God. But in the causal sense, it's to frighten. Who should we be frightened of? If God is enlightening our life and he's our salvation, who can top that? Who can trump God? And the answer is nobody. Whom should I fear? Nobody. There's no one that I have to fear. Goes on in the second statement, the Lord is my strength. Strength here, you know, when I see strength, I kind of think about arm muscles. This one, it translates more to like a fortified place, a defense, a fort, a fortress. The Lord is your fortress. He's your strong defense. He's your tower. He's the strength, the defense of my life. That's literally to be alive. Of whom then shall I be afraid? Notice this is a different word. Fear up there, to fear, to be frightened. This one is to be startled by. Who are you going to be alarmed by? What should cause you to quake or tremble with fear in this life? Nothing. The Lord's your strong tower. The Lord's your defense. He's your fortress. He's what's protecting your very life. Can you ask for a better ally? In the midst of all your adversaries, can you ask for anyone better? No, I can't top them. All right. Verse 2. When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat me up, to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Okay, so he's talking about past tense, the time when he has been delivered. Okay. When the wicked, you know, the wicked means to spoil, figuratively, but to make good for nothing, to break into pieces. So when the spoilers, those who would destroy you and your life, when they come upon you, even your enemies, and that one, that word literally means narrow. When you're in a tight spot, when the crowds, your opponents are crowding around. So you imagine being in the middle of a scrum where everyone is against you. Those are the wicked who want to destroy you. They're crowding around, pushing upon you. And then it says, my foes, those are literally hating, those that hate you, your adversaries. So you've got three different strong descriptions, descriptor words describing those that are against you in this world. And we just ask, who do we have to fear? Even when the wicked, the destroyers, your enemies, those that are crowding around you to do you harm, and your foes, those that hate you, even when they come upon you to eat up your very flesh, consume you, destroy you. It says that when they tried to do that, what happened to them? They stumbled. to totter or waver. They got tripped up and they fell. They were cast down. Who cast them down? God. God. He's continuing. He's your defense. This psalm is a great, great comfort when we're going through hard times, when we're allowing the winds and waves of this world to overwhelm us and distract us. Okay? So, verse 3 looks to the future. It says, though a host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. Okay, so we don't use the word host very much, but that literally translates to an army. It's an encampment, hence an army. So though an entire army should pitch its tents around you, you think of like a siege, like you're in a city and you've got, you know, an army that's encircled you. Or maybe you're not in a walled up city, you just feel like you're out on the plain in your little pup tent, you've got an army around you. Though a host or an army should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. And again, that's the be affrighted. I don't have to. I don't have to fear. Why? Because God's our strength. He's our strength. He's our light. And he's our salvation. Though war. Okay, so when the army's still on the outside encamping you, it's the threat of war, right? The war's looming. Now it's saying the war, which really means a battle. Though the battle actually starts, though the battle should rise against me, in this will I be confident. And that word confident there means properly to hide for refuge. Okay? What does that mean? It means in this you can trust. You can be sure, secure. What? That God's your strength. That he's your defense. That he's still your salvation. A host can't defeat him. An army in battle can't defeat him. Okay? And he describes his perspective of what does he desire? What does the psalms desire? One thing have I desired. That word desire means to inquire or to request. In some cases, it means to demand. I've requested. One thing have I requested of the Lord. And that will I seek after. Seek means to search out. And that includes by any method, but specifically it's referring to worship and prayer. This is what I'm going to seek after. This is what I'm going to search for, strive after. One thing, what is that? That I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. And that word dwell literally means to sit down and to remain. That I want to be and remain in the house of the Lord. And that house literally means house, the abode of the Lord, all the days of my life. And while I'm there, I want to do what? Behold. Behold the beauty of the Lord and inquire in his temple. So behold means to gaze upon, to look, to contemplate. You want to see the beauty of the Lord. And beauty is things that are agreeable, the delight, splendor. Probably the best word for us would be the grace. I want to see the grace of the Lord. And to inquire, this is interesting. This word inquire literally translates to plow or to break up. But figuratively, we see it means to inspect or admire or to consider or make inquiry. So we're asking of the Lord. We're considering him. We're looking at him and inspecting him, considering him in his temple. And that word temple comes from a root word that basically means able in the sense of that has the capacity. It's a big, big space. So here it says a large public building, such as a palace or temple, that the place where the Lord dwells is sufficiently large. If that makes sense. Okay. Verse 5, for in the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me up upon a rock. Okay. So in time of trouble, that word time literally translates to a day. In the day or days of trouble, trouble means bad or evil. He shall hide. Hide means to cover over. He'll cover me over in his pavilion. Pavilion translates best to a hut, based on the entwined boughs. So you think about the tents, not the tents, rather the, I don't remember exactly what they're called, but tabernacles. Well, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Jews were instructed to build, outdoor tents out of branches and boughs, and they're supposed to dwell in those for the week to remind them of how they were cared for in the wilderness when he brought them out of Egypt. And so this word pavilion harkens back to that kind of structure, a hut with entwined boughs. But he's going to hide me. He's going to cover me over. And in the secret, which means covered, he's covered me in his tabernacle. That's tabernacle is literally a tent. Shall he hide me? To hide, to keep me close, to conceal me. In time of trouble, the Lord will take us and conceal us within himself. He'll set me up upon a rock. And that word rock, well, set me up means to raise up. He'll lift you up and put you on a rock, which could best be translated as a cliff. He'll put you up on a cliff. So go back to your image of the army that's encamped about you, and you're all down at their level, and it seems so scary. It says in the time of trouble, he's going to lift you up, and he's going to put you on that cliff where they can't reach you. Okay. And now shall my head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. So he moved above their level, lifted up. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. All right, sacrifices of joy. God, sacrifice literally refers to the slaughter. It's talking about the animals that were to be killed. Of joy. This word joy is it's a clamor. It's a shout of joy, kind of like a battle cry, but happier. Okay, he'll shout with joy, and sing. That's what it means to sing. Yea, I will sing praises, and this praises includes celebrating in both song and music unto the Lord. So you're shouting for the deliverance while it's still going on. And you're praising the Lord with your voice. You're lifting up. Verse 7 gets into a request. It says, hear, O Lord. Give attention to what I'm saying. O Lord, when I cry. Cry means to address. I'm calling out to you, Lord. I'm calling you. And I cry with my voice. Have mercy upon me. And that mercy is a great. Means to bend or stoop in kindness to an inferior. So anything that the Lord does to us is always a mercy, because he has to bend and stoop down to our level, because we are definitely inferior to him. But he's asking for mercy and to answer me, which literally means to pay attention to, give heed to me, look at me and my cause, and plead my cause, Lord. I'm crying unto you in my prayers. Please hear and look upon me. Verse 8 repeats back something the Lord said. When thou saidest, seek my face. That's the instruction from the Lord to you and to me. Seek my face. And seek means to search out. Remember, we talked about that specifically in worship and prayer, but in any manner. To seek, to ask, to beg, to make inquiry, seeking the face of the Lord. It said, my heart responded. My heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek. I'll do it. Okay. And as I'm trying, verse 9 is the request, hide not thy face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help. Leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. Excuse me. All right, so hide not. So don't hide your face from me. Put not thy servant away. That put literally means to stretch, to spread out, to bend away from me. Don't bend me away or send me away from you. Because of your anger. And that word anger is, that word actually translates to nose or nostril. It's kind of interesting. And you think about the rapid breathing when you're upset, you're just blowing out your nose. So your ire or your anger. Don't put me away from your anger. Thou hast been my help. Help means aid again. Leave me not. This word is interesting. Proper, that means to pound. Like to smite, so if you're beating something flat, so by implication there, it gets to thrusting something off. Don't thrust me off. Don't reject me. Don't pound me flat and send me out. Leave me not, neither forsake me. And forsake means to loosen the bonds or to relinquish. O God of my salvation, my liberty, my deliverance and prosperity. Verse 10, when my father and mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. And so your closest family connections or anything, they can fail you, but the Lord will always be there. He'll take you up. So even when those closest connections, you know, forsake, you know, relinquish, they let go, then the Lord will take me up. And that take me up means to gather. He'll gather you to him. Okay. Verse 11. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. This word teach is kind of neat. Properly, it means to flow as water. Transitively to lay or throw down or to throw, especially like an arrow shooting it. So you think about the imagery there when you get flood waters running through your yard. You can tell where those flowed, right? Heavy irrigation, and it's, not irrigation, erosion, that's the word. But you can see that path. So show me your path, thy way, O Lord, and the way there is the road, one that's well trodden, the course of life. Not just any road, but his road. It says, and lead me in a plain path. And that plain refers to level. One that is right, that is just, that is, prepared, you know, that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, that it was a one right path. Not one that's full of the pitfalls of this world. And because of mine enemies, there are the enemies that are on every side. Again, the enemies there are the hostiles. Deliver me not under the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, such as breathe out cruelty. Okay, so this is probably what's going on most directly to the psalmist right now, that there are people who are slandering him and trying to cause him harm. Says don't turn me over to him. Save me from them. Says false witnesses are risen up against me. The word false means untruth, shams. And the witnesses are, you know, those who are giving testimony. False witnesses are risen up against me. And such as breathe out cruelty. And the word cruelty is violence. And it reminds me of when we looked at Proverbs and it talked about when the innocent are, you know, dragged to their death and you've got the ability to deliver them because you know the truth, to not stay your hand. And so here he's got false witnesses who are, you know, accusing him of wrong and that they want to do him harm. And so he's asking for the Lord to protect him. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So he'd been discouraged to pass out, to give up, unless I had believed, means to build up or support, to be firm, right? To render firm or faithful. I can be firm in my understanding. If I believe to see, what it means to see, the goodness of the Lord. And this word goodness is as good as a noun in the widest sense, especially goodness, superlatively concrete. What does that mean? The best. God's goodness is the best. I had fainted unless I believed I was going to see goodness of the Lord while I'm still here in the land of the living. And then verse 14 says, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen mine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. And that word wait means bind together, collect, expect. So you are patiently looking and waiting for the Lord to answer prayers and deliverances. And in the meantime, we're to be of good courage, which means to be fastened upon, to be strong. You are leaning on the truth of God's word and his character. And he shall strengthen. Strengthen means to be alert, both physically and mentally, to be confirmed or courage and steadfast. He'll strengthen thy heart. Wait, I say, upon the Lord. So these are just a few thoughts from this one pretty short little psalm, but there's a lot of encouragement in it. One that we can draw on pretty much at any point of our time, because often you and I, if you're anything like me, we'll get impatient, that we want things to be answered. We want them to be right now, and preferably we'd like it to be within our power and the means that we already have at our disposal, and not actually have to depend on the Lord for anything. That's our kind of carnal human self. But if we can keep the perspective of regardless of what's going on in this world, God's still in control. He's still on the throne. All light and wisdom still comes from him. The only salvation in this world comes from him. Any strength or defense that you have, it's not in your own power. You don't have any power in comparison. It comes from him. So, trust him. There's nothing that we need fear. We will, but there's nothing that we need to fear. Even if a whole army is encircling our home, that we would be safe and secure with him. And, you know, honestly, as Jesus put it, you know, don't fear those who all they can do is kill the body. That's it. That's all they got. You know, fear the Lord. He's the one that we should fear and reverence, not as in a shaking terror, but morally reverenced as we recognize his strength and his power and his majesty, and recognize the mercies that he gives us every day, and not to take those for granted or act as if they're a given or a due, that they are by his grace and for his glory. So I thank y'all for your time today.